Good evening, and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm Ayan Bior in Washington. Here are some of the stories we're covering today, Monday, September 18th, 2017. In the 72nd session of the United Nations General Assembly, U.S. Ambassador to the UN, Nikki Haley, says member countries must get behind this year's reform agenda.
Our mission leaving here today is to not be satisfied with less than a complete consensus on this reform agenda. We are always stronger when we speak with one voice, and the future of this institution is worth the extra mile.
And members of South Sudan's opposition Democratic Party file a suit against their own leaders.
We are here to present a petition against Onyote and group. They are from our party, but they have violated the constitution of the party.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. The UN General Assembly continues with opening speeches and high-level meetings in New York today. A special meeting on the UN's reform agenda was chaired by U.S. President Donald Trump today, and the focus of Trump's remarks were on the UN's shortfalls.
Yet in recent years, the United Nations has not reached its full potential because of bureaucracy and mismanagement. While the United Nations on a regular budget has increased by 140% and its staff has more than doubled since 2000, we are not seeing the results in line with this investment. But I know that under the Secretary General, that's changing, and it's changing fast, and we've seen it.
In what was his first speech before the General Assembly, Trump welcomed efforts to meet UN goals, noting that the UN has helped advance women and girls' empowerment while feeding the hungry. But the U.S. president reminded observers that there is still a long way to go.
That's why we commend the Secretary General and his call for the United Nations to focus more on people and less on bureaucracy. We seek a United Nations that regains the trust of the people around the world. In order to achieve this, the United Nations must hold every level of management accountable, protect whistleblowers, and focus on results rather than on process.
The UN Secretary General, Antonio Guterres, who attended the same meeting, says the UN is already making changes to the way it does business around the world.
90% of our personnel serve in the field. And we need to bring decision making closer to the people we serve. Trust and empower managers, reform cumbersome and costly budgetary procedures, and eliminate duplicative structures.
The United States is the top provider to the United Nations peacekeeping operations. In 2017, the U.S. contributed over 28% of the overall peacekeeping budget, compared to the second highest contributor, China, who gave just over 10% of the overall peacekeeping budget. Trump reiterated his concern about the large share the U.S. contributes year after year to the U.N., which he called unfair while on the campaign trail.
We must ensure that no one and no member state shoulders a disproportionate share of the burden, and that's militarily or financially. We also ask that every peacekeeping mission have clearly defined goals and metrics for evaluating success. They deserve to see the value in the United Nations, and it is our job to show it to them.
Guterres says the UN has already put forth programs to ensure efficiency is met across UN platforms.
We have embarked on plans to achieve gender parity in the UN, to protect whistleblowers and strengthen counterterrorism structures. And we are reforming our peace and security architecture to ensure we are stronger in prevention, more agile in mediation, and more effective and cost-effective in peacekeeping operations.
The Declaration of Support for United Nations Reform has been signed by 128 nations, according to Nikki Haley, the U.S. ambassador to the UN.
Our mission leaving here today is to not be satisfied with less than a complete consensus on this reform agenda. We are always stronger when we speak with one voice, and the future of this institution is worth the extra mile.
The approved budget for UN peacekeeping operations for the current fiscal year through June of next year is $6.8 billion, according to the UN. The money finances 13 of the 15 peacekeeping missions, supports logistics to the African Union in Somalia. The other two peacekeeping missions, the UN Military Observer Group in India and Pakistan, are financed through the UN's budget. Trump was sharply critical of the United Nations' work as president-elect in November and December of last year. There are reports that the leader of the International Youth for Africa, or IYA, has called on the United States government to reconsider the recent sanctions it imposed on South Sudanese officials as a mechanism to end the conflict in South Sudan. IYA's executive director, Ter Manyang Gutwich, said the sanctions imposed on Information Minister Michael McQuay and two other South Sudanese individuals will not stop the nearly four-year conflict from escalating even more. Gutwich is quoted in today's online edition of the Sudan Tribune as saying, sanctions on individuals will create less impact in South Sudan. If it is individuals' sanctions, let the U.S. government consider sanctioning the East African countries because South Sudanese generals and officials have assistance to provide to their nations, end quote. The Trump administration also imposed sanctions on the former Army Chief of Staff, Paul Malong. The U.S. Treasury Department says the sanctions involve freezing all assets belonging to those South Sudanese officials implicated in obstructing peace and security in South Sudan. Gutwich says the new sanctions will never improve conditions in South Sudan. More than 2 million people have been displaced and tens of thousands of people have been killed in the conflict. In July 2015, the UN Security Council imposed sanctions on six South Sudanese generals accused of igniting the conflict. The generals were from both warring parties. In November 2016, the U.S. called on the United Nations Security Council to impose sanctions on Malong and McQuay Luth, saying both men were hampering the peace process in South Sudan. Former First Vice President and SPLMIO leader Riek Machar was also on the proposed list. Members of the opposition Democratic Change Party have filed a lawsuit against South Sudan Minister of Agriculture, Onyote Odigo, accusing him of hijacking the leadership of the party after the resignation of former party chairman Lama Kol. Waki Simon Wudu has more for VOA from Juba.
We are here to present a petition against Onyote and group. They are from our party, but they have violated the constitution of the party.
That is Andrew Okoni, a senior member of the Democratic Change, or DC party, and a former opposition chief whip in the National Legislative Assembly, speaking to journalists outside the South Sudan Supreme Court building today. Okoni's group sued Adigo and his allies after attempts to amicably resolve the matter out of court failed, according to Okoni. Okoni says they took their complaint to the National Alliance, an umbrella group of 20 political parties, but the alliance did not resolve the matter. DC Party Secretary General Deng Bior accuses Onyote and other party officials of intentionally trying to break up the party and forging documents.
They must remind the party division and disintegration and violating the DC Party constitution, right? By illegally declaring themselves to the party leadership, claiming to have been elected by what they call National Leadership Council, which according to the party constitution does not elect the party chairman. Illegal occupation and ransacking the party premises. Number three is forgery and stealing of party documents and use them for issuing illegal resolutions and decision in the name of the party, including changing official signature to the party account with the Agricultural Bank of South Sudan.
Bior says some of the counts include illegally soliciting funds in the name of the party and using the funds to conduct illegal meetings and misusing party finances for illegal activities. Adigo and his allies say they are the rightful leaders of the DC party. Suahel Deng Adigo's deputy says even though South Sudan Infocus read to her the counts filed in court against Adigo, she wants to obtain a copy of the petition before commenting on the lawsuit. Okoni claims Adigo's group was dismissed from the party long ago after they violated the party's constitution. Prosecuting Anthony Malual Duarquek says Onyoti and his allies have violated the DC party constitution and the National Alliance constitution.
That's why we are here, to let them go back to constitution, and then those violations will be shown to them by the court.
Tensions within the DC party erupted last year after former agriculture minister and party founder Lam Akolo fled the country and resigned from the party following a flare-up in violence between government forces and soldiers loyal to former First Vice President Riek Machar. Onyoti, who is the former minority leader in the National Assembly, deemed himself the leader of the DC party in November of last year. Some months later, President Salva Kiir appointed Onyoti the National Minister of Agriculture. For VOA News, I'm Waki Simon Wudu in Juba.
You're tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. A vaccination campaign gets underway in one African country to prevent the spread of cholera. Find out where when we come back.
For in-depth news and analysis on events in South Sudan, tune in to South Sudan in Focus, Monday through Friday from 1630 to 1700 UTC. We are also on the web at www.voanews.com/South Sudan or download our podcast on iTunes. That's South Sudan in Focus on VOA Africa.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
how can African countries develop to export more manufacturing goods rather than raw materials?
African countries should open many companies, industries, markets, new markets that will specialize in manufacturing. So as they manufacture, they will have to export more.
African countries should put up more industries and encourage people to go into agro-processing.
And also needs people to be trained on how to manufacture the things ready so that they can be transported.
I will have to say that we need to build our own machines. A product like cocoa, for example, if we had the machineries to manufacture chocolates, I'm sure we will not be exporting it outside.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus. An emergency vaccination campaign is getting underway in northeastern Nigeria to prevent a deadly cholera outbreak from spreading to other countries. As Lisa Schlein reports from Geneva, the World Health Organization is heading this campaign.
The World Health Organization reports the potentially devastating cholera situation is emerging in Borno State in northeastern Nigeria. During the past few months, it says 2,600 suspected cases of this fatal disease, including 48 deaths, have occurred in this former stronghold of Boko Haram. The militant group has been waging war to establish an Islamic State in northeastern Nigeria since 2009. Dominique Legros is cholera coordinator for WHO's Department for Pandemic and Epidemic Diseases. He says the outbreak, which is centered in camps for internally displaced people, is spreading to other areas of northeastern Nigeria, toward Chad and northern Cameroon. He says 900,000 people in the state will receive the oral cholera vaccine to quickly contain the spread of the disease.
Once it's out of the box, once it has spread, it's very, very difficult to contain, and we have huge number of cases and deaths. So this outbreak in Nigeria hopefully will not reach Chad, because in Chad already we have an alert in the eastern part of the country towards the border with Sudan, 344 cases, 49 deaths.
Le Gros says this comes to a 14% case fatality. He notes this is very high for a cholera outbreak, which usually has a case fatality rate of less than 1%. WHO estimates the global cholera disease burden at around 2.9 million suspected cases, including 95,000 deaths. It reports Yemen has the world's worst cholera epidemic, with nearly 690,000 suspected cases and more than 2,000 deaths. The agency expresses concern about the situation in Africa, where it reports tens of thousands of suspected cases and thousands of deaths in, among others, Somalia, South Sudan, Sudan, Eastern Democratic Republic of Congo, Kenya, and Tanzania. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
All hope that the tiny nation of Lesotho might find political stability has been shattered by recent events, including the shooting death of the country's army chief and the arrest of a journalist who was critical of the government. Southern African heads of state met over the weekend to discuss a way forward. VOA's Anita Powell reports from Johannesburg.
An election in June was Lesotho's third poll in 5 years, after two coalitions collapsed amid infighting and meddling from the army. The third time was supposed to be the charm, as new Prime Minister Tom Tebane promised to loosen the military's stranglehold on politics. But the killing of the army chief by two subordinates 2 weeks ago has raised concerns that more instability is ahead. And the arrest of a journalist and the shutdown of his radio station have made the situation even more dire, critics of the government say. In the last 3 months, says opposition politician Frohang Sekamane, the nation has fallen under the reign of terror.
The police can seize anybody, doesn't matter how very high placed they were. A person at the level of minister can be taken, instructed to come to the police, and they do that, and then they can be tortured for 3 days, and then also over the weekend and forced to say certain things. That is what I mean by terror.
In a written statement sent to VOA, the opposition documents a litany of events, including the arrest, alleged torture, and subsequent flight of an opposition lawmaker. The nation's communication minister confirmed the lawmaker's August arrest, but said he was called in as a person of interest in a murder case and was treated well while in custody. Rights watchdog Amnesty International says it is also worried about recent events in Lesotho. Researcher Shireen Mukadam.
Really, what we're seeing is patterns of arbitrary arrests. We are seeing allegations of torture and other ill treatment. We're seeing a lack of progress into criminal investigations for unlawful killings. And we are also seeing attacks on freedom of expression in Lesotho.
The opposition and rights groups are calling on the international community and on the Southern African Development Community to assist in restoring the rule of law. Southern African Development Community, or SADC, has made numerous attempts at mediation. Heads of state met over the weekend in South Africa to discuss the issue, with host President Jacob Zuma saying, "We cannot and shall not be in Lesotho forever." Anita Powell, VOA News, Johannesburg.
More than 300 global companies have now committed themselves to reducing emissions in line with the Paris Climate Agreement. That's 90 more than last year. 50 U.S. companies are involved, more than any other country. The goal is to help keep rising global temperatures to well below 2 degrees Celsius in the coming years. Scientists say temperatures above that level would trigger greater sea level rise, droughts, floods, wildfires, and plant and animal extinctions. Cynthia Cummins is director of private sector climate mitigation at the World Resources Institute. She spoke to VOA's Joe DiCapua about the greenhouse gas emissions reduction program called the Science-Based Targets Initiative.
It's an initiative that is working to encourage companies to raise their ambition of their reduction targets in line with the Paris Agreement.
Now, what exactly does that mean? We understand that more than 300 global companies are going to do this.
So there's many steps to their participation. First, the company makes a commitment to set a science-based target, and then they have 2 years to actually develop the target and submit it to the initiative for review. And then we have a set of criteria that we've determined represent best practices, best practice on how to set a science-based target, and we review the targets against those criteria, and the targets that get approved are then recognized through the initiative. We just review the target itself and the level of ambition and the boundary of the target, things like that, to determine whether it meets our criteria. So far, we've approved 71 companies' targets, and you can see those all on our website.
Can you give us an idea what some of these companies are doing to try to reduce emissions?
Some of the things that companies are doing to meet these targets are improving the energy efficiency of their operations, investing in renewable energy. Many of the targets include the company's value chain, so engaging with suppliers and helping suppliers be more efficient are some of the actions that companies are taking.
How does this line up with the Paris Climate Agreement?
The companies are all setting targets that are 2-degree targets, so that's in line with the minimum ambition of the Paris Agreement. The Paris Agreement also encourages them to go beyond 2 degrees to 1.5-degree targets. As 1.5-degree targets become available or beyond 2-degree targets become available, we'll be helping companies to set targets with that increased level of ambition as well.
Cynthia Cummins is Director of Private Sector Climate Mitigation at the World Resources Institute. She spoke to VOA's Joe DiCapua. A new Nigerian novel examines the clash between traditional and modern values in a marriage. In many traditional cultures, a husband may marry a second wife in order to carry on the family name if his first wife has not been able to get pregnant. The novel, Stay With Me, by Ayobami Adebayo, tells a painful tale of a marriage where polygamy clashes with a couple's loving relationship. VOA's Adam Phillip reports.
At the beginning of Stay With Me, Yejide has been unable to get pregnant after 4 years of marriage to Akin, her husband. Akin's extended family pressures him to take a second wife. He reluctantly agrees. The other woman, named Funmi, does not come to live with the couple, but her presence slowly poisons their relationship, as Yejide is expected to take a secondary role if Funmi bears Akin a child. Author Ayobami Adebayo says this family dynamic is common in today's Nigeria, where a childless mother has low status.
And it's something that I thought about a lot while I was working on this book. Particularly within families, a lot of the power that women get to wield is dependent on their ability to have children, preferably male children, such that a woman who gets married and doesn't have children, in many ways, as far as many people, for instance, the husband's family are concerned, that marriage is not existent. If he gets somebody pregnant, that woman who gets pregnant has more say, has more rights, will be respected more than the woman who's been married to him for a decade or so.
Until recently, polygamy was widespread in Nigeria. Adebayo says the practice is far rarer than it used to be, but the possibility lingers even in relatively westernized families.
You are aware as a woman that men are not required to be monogamous, even if the woman doesn't move in with you. You're always aware that if he decides that he's going to have a mistress and he's going to set her up, people are really just going to tell you, you know what, you have to just live with this.
Adebayo says that when a couple is infertile, most assume it's the woman's fault.
While I was researching this novel, I spoke to people who work as doctors, fertility clinics. And one very interesting thing that I found out was that out of 10 couples, only 2 out of 10 men would show up to even get tested. When a couple doesn't have children, it's seen as a tragedy, but it's more of the woman's problem. I'm talking today in Nigeria, and I often wonder about why that is.
In Adebayo's novel, it's actually Akin's mother who argues most forcefully for him to take a fertile second wife. Indeed, Adebayo says that even though women are often expected to be subservient to men in Nigerian households, they are often matriarchs who run things.
Yeah, as long as they don't show that they're doing it. It's sort of a tightrope that many women have to walk. One of the byproducts, I think, of polygamy was that in many families, if not most, many children developed an allegiance to their mothers, so that when children grow up, the mothers become very powerful.
Many Nigerian men justify women being subservient by saying it aligns with centuries-old African culture. But Adebayo says that both history and her observation of her grandparents and great-grandparents contradict this.
There were ideas that we absorbed when we were colonized by the British, Victorian ideas, Judeo-Christian ideas, that we somehow come to think of as the way we have always done things. I mean, one very interesting example is the concept of women working outside of the home. I mean, if you read our history, it was just normal for many women to work outside of the home. But now you have people telling you that it's African culture for a woman not to have her own financial independence. So I think it's a convenient thing that people reach for when they want to sometimes keep women down.
Ayobami Adebayo is the Nigerian author of Stay With Me, a new novel published in August by Knopf. Stay With Me is shortlisted for the 2017 Bailey's Women's Prize for Fiction. Adam Phillips, VOA News, New York.
Here's a look at today's headlines with South Sudan in Focus editor Carol Van Dam.
Thanks, Diane. The UN General Assembly continues with opening speeches and high-level meetings in New York this week. A special meeting on the UN's reform agenda was chaired by U.S. President Donald Trump today. President Trump focused on the UN's shortfalls. In his first speech before the UN General Assembly, Mr. Trump welcomed efforts to meet UN goals, noting that the UN has helped advance women and girls' empowerment and is feeding the hungry. But he also said much must still be accomplished. UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres says the UN is making changes to the way it does business around the world, adding that 90% of the UN personnel serve in the field. The U.S. is the top provider to UN peacekeeping operations. This year, the U.S. paid a little over 28% of the overall peacekeeping budget, compared to the second highest contributor, which is China, and it gave just over 10% of the budget. Trump reiterated his concern about the large share the U.S. contributes year in and year out to the UN, which he called unfair. There are indications that the leader of the International Youth for Africa, or IYA, has called on the U.S. government to reconsider its recent sanctions imposed on South Sudanese officials as a mechanism to end the conflict in the country. The group's executive director said the sanctions imposed on Information Minister Michael Makuei and two other South Sudanese individuals will not stop the nearly four-year-long conflict from escalating even more. And finally, members of the opposition Democratic Change have filed a lawsuit against South Sudan Minister of Agriculture, Toure Onyati Adigo, accusing him of hijacking the leadership of the party after the resignation of former party chairman Lam Akola Jawin. Andrew Akoni, senior member of the Democratic Change Party and former opposition chief whip in the National Legislative Assembly, told reporters outside the South Supreme Court building that he is not happy with the new leadership. And that's a look at some of today's top stories. I'm Carol Van Dam.
Thanks, Carol. And that's our show for this Monday. We leave you with the song Get Up, Stand Up by legendary reggae star Bob Marley and the Wailers.
Get up, stand up. Stand up for your right. Get up, stand up. Stand up for your right. Get up. Bye.
Preacher man, oh, tell me, heaven is under the earth. I know you don't know what life is really worth. Is that all that Peter is told? After story had never been told. So now you see the light. Hey, stand up for your right. Come on,
get up.
We've been listening to Bob Marley with the song Get Up, Stand Up. I'm Ayan Bior in Washington. We'd like to know what you think about the show. You can reach us online at southsudan@voanews.com or find us on our Facebook page, South Sudan in Focus. Thanks for listening. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. But if you know what life is worth, you will